96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure.
The heavens, no man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtapositioning us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, his spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walked through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots, we on the ground, the camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, glory, glory.
Good morning. Welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You know this voice already. It's Stephen Miller. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for letting me join you. I don't have a clue what it is that you do at 11 o'clock, but whatever it is you do, I am happy that you are doing the do and that you have decided to do the do with me, right? So I kind of want to clap my feet this morning. I got one of my favorite people to be in studio with me, believe that or not. And it's because, you know, for a long time I had said, right, that we needed to put smart people in a room and let's figure out how to get schools back open. And everybody was just being so blasé about the reopening of schools as though it wouldn't affect the Bahamas that will be the Bahamas in 30 years, right? Like if we fudge this up, right, 30 years from today, we will reap in dividends the weight and the price of incompetence. And I don't know if you've been seeing the way that things run around here these days, but even with some of the most intellectually stimulated people on the planet, with the greatest set of degrees on the planet, incompetence is a very, very heavy price tag, right? And so I can only then imagine what 30 years removed from today's date would look like if those people, right, didn't have an opportunity to have what I call fundamental education or basic education. And that is why I thought that we ought to have been approaching the journey back to the classroom with a little more fervor, with a little more aggression. And I don't know if I saw it all throughout the last, you know, 20 months or thereabout. But praise the Lord, a new day is here, right? And the children are on their way back to school. And can I say this, right? I've never seen children look this happy to be in school uniforms. This is something new for me. So that in itself is a completely new thing that I'm getting used to again. But for whatever it's worth, I feel like we're going to have to continue to think our way through this. And we're not going to be able to just put, one-size-fit-all stop-gap measure in place and think that with an evolving virus like the coronavirus, with a virus that shifts and moves as quickly as this one does, that we could celebrate any accomplishment, right? Like we have literally got to simply keep the champagne on ice the entire time around here, and celebrate the small moments, but quickly put the champagne back on ice, because I imagine that at any point we get very comfortable patting ourselves on the back. One of my good friends, Mr. Peter Ramsey, always says that is when the contuberance will hit the perpendicular. All right? And so I brought smart people because I ain't smart and they smart. And I like to let y'all listen to smart people so that y'all, you know, could be enlightened like me. And so I brought the one person who obviously has had this thing kind of figured out from what it appears to me I've recommended it a million times. Listen, just go ask the woman how to do it so she could tell us and then we could all know. And so I brought her, Miss Lisa McGartney. She is with me this morning. We are talking about school, the challenges. How did we get where we are? How do we get past where we are? What are some of the things that we need to look into? There's also something that I want to talk to her about because, you know, I have this, I am from a college of thought, right? That quite honestly, we could waive uniforms indefinitely. Like, I at this point, I don't see the point. We've proven that the children aren't all going to have uniforms. We shouldn't straddle ourselves or saddle ourselves, rather, with this social burden that is uniforms. And my thinking around it is, they say uniforms are for poor people. I don't understand that because uniforms are clothes that you specifically buy to wear one place. Like, you cannot wear them anywhere else, right? And so I don't understand how that helps the poor. And let's not pretend. You go to City Market where we enforce, or let me not say City Market, all of the various food markets where we employ children to do packing. And you see Pookie them. They got on their school uniform, right? So it tells me that they obviously don't have enough money to be able to afford something else. The uniform is a white shirt. They use the one white shirt they got. That's the one for school. And so maybe, I believe, the time may have come, COVID-19 may have produced a new dynamic where children just no longer require school uniforms. Because what I argue is, it is easily arguable that an identification card is a whole lot cheaper than a uniform is. And so I'm from that school of thought. Maybe Ms. McGarney could tell me how to get around that, whether or not I'm going crazy and I just need to shut up, but we'll figure it all out. So she's here with me this morning. She's Lisa McGartney from the Meridian School. And they've been kind of up and running the whole time, right? And she's kind of here to tell us, well, not the whole time, but like...
I wish, no.
No? Y'all ain't been up and running? I've been bragging, but how you been up and running the whole time? But they've been up and running. They've been up and running more than the rest of these people, right? And so we're here to talk about how to get that that module kind of going, what exactly it is that we need to do. Okay, so good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. Thank
you. It's always so good to have you. It's always so good to have you.
Nice to be here.
We are in the first week of the return to school, right? There are obviously some successes to be celebrated here. But I imagine that there are also some challenges, right? Children are, for the first time in 20 months, going back to school, many of them acclimatizing themselves to the school surrounding. I hear the administrators and the people, the policymakers talking about ensuring spacing among children. I imagine that is as difficult as walking backwards up a mountain is. These children haven't seen one another in 20 months. It's not going to be an easy task. What exactly do you imagine when you consider taking the task of making children understand that I know that you all are happy, but we've got to figure out this whole spacing dynamic?
Oh, such a big question to start with. Mm-hmm. There's so much to say. Well, I can just speak to, what we did mm-hmm. at our lower school, primary schools, and preschools. And what we did, first of all, we were delighted that we were allowed to go back into school mm-hmm. after an extended period of virtual and hybrid. We're still in a hybrid situation at the moment, but I'm hoping that that will change in the coming days. What we did with our younger population at schools, and that's anybody that was in primary school and lower, mm-hmm. is we started out with a negative COVID test.
Okay.
So in order to come back to school, we asked every student... Mm-hmm. Regardless of age,
okay.
to present a negative antigen COVID test. Mm-hmm. And this was just a layer of protection with exactly the point in mind that you raised. Mm-hmm. Kids are going to be happy to see each other. They're going to be, you know, in groups, and it is difficult for them to comprehend right. in some instances the intensity and the complexity of physical distancing. Mm-hmm. So we started out with COVID testing for everybody coming in. In terms of our primary school students, we did a few things that we thought were practical in order to facilitate a return to the classroom, one of which is, of course, the individual sneeze guards okay. around each child's space mm-hmm. in the classroom. Mm-hmm. We no longer share supplies, So every child has their own little kit of blocks.
Crayons.
We no longer have the big, beautiful box of 59 million colors.
Okay.
So everybody has their own specific resources that they use. Mm-hmm. I think one of the coolest things that we did, and one of the most practical things that we did, is we built hand washing stations outside of each building. So we knew that kids, we'd be washing hands even more than we did before. Mm-hmm. So what we did is, in an attempt to minimize exposure and not filter 100 children into the bathrooms mm-hmm. like in the past, we have proper hand washing stations.
This soap, water, napkins?
Soap, water, napkins,
right.
Fresh running water,
right.
Properly plumbed.
Yeah.
They look like inside of the bathrooms.
Right.
So we have those outside of each of our buildings mm-hmm. so that kids, we're washing hands constantly.
Okay.
We need to invest in lotion now.
Yeah.
So we're washing hands constantly, and the kids, you know, the beautiful thing about children is children adapt very well. To, and they adapt very well to order and to discipline in the school setting.
Mm-hmm.
So our kids, I mean, you know, we have dots outside of each of the hand washing stations. Then they know they stand on their dot and they talk to their friends, but the dots are spaced out so that when they do stand together, they're not huddling on each other and they're adequate
commend
spacing.
I want to commend you on actual soap and water. Can I tell you,
I'm sick of sanitizing.
I don't mind the hand sanitizer. Like I went to a place. I'll give them a free shout out. Right, I sat at the bar at what's the little place on Bay Street, the sushi place. Them, right. So they have their hand sanitizer is so delightful. I said, what is
it
this?
Minty?
It was like flora and mint, and it was amazing, right? And then I go right up the road to a convenience store, and they spray spook on my hand. I don't know what this stuff is. And I told them, I said, you know, I just came from this place. The hand sanitizer was so delightful. What is in this bottle? And so I'm very happy that you have soap, and because sanitizer give me the
heebie-jeebies. And it's important for small children as well.
And plus,
there's alcohol content and all sorts of interesting things in the sanitizer. So we thought it was really important that we had ample opportunities for children to wash their hands again without having to funnel them into the washrooms.
Okay. So that is one of the major steps that I'm not sure that we will realize that on our public school mm-hmm. compounds, right? So maybe that's something that they need to think about.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we really need to understand the complexities mm-hmm. of getting public school children back into school versus getting private school back.
Right.
It's not apples and apples.
No, and I agree.
Yeah, there are so many considerations, I think, that we honestly, and I mean, we're all emotional and everybody's, you know, chiming and everybody has their attitudes and their ideas on how this can be done. But there are so many considerations that exist in the public school sector that don't exist in the private school sector. So we have to be careful. We have to be careful making the comparison.
Sure.
And just because it's an unfair comparison.
I think one of the things that is to the benefit, though, is that we are talking colloquially, right? So I get it. They come from different social classes. I get it. They come from different economic classes.
That's not it.
And some of them have greater adaptability, right? But they're all Bahamian children. So largely,
it's not about social status. It's not about any of that stuff.
No, I'm talking about cultural differences, right? So it's not like you have children that come from Texas and then children that come from Florida.
I call myself having conducted a great big social experiment over the past 24 years that I've been doing what I've been doing. Mm-hmm. And children are children.
Okay.
And children adapt to their circumstances and they adapt to their surroundings very, very, very easily.
Okay.
I'll give you an example. We had a couple of kids, my daughter included, a few years ago, started a program called the Find You Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
They basically took the old, do you remember the old Stardust building on Blue Hill Road and Fleming
mm-hmm.
Street?
Mm-hmm.
They basically took that building, went inside and decorated it like a school, like mini classrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did was 3 days per week, they had kids come in after school and they'd help with homework. They teach them music and drama and art and all sorts of interesting things. And we do reading. They'd give every child a snack and a drink and we'd sit down and they'd talk about, you know, good character and values and things along those lines. The first few days, it was chaos. And I'm like, oh gosh, why did we do this? This is not a great idea. Literally, I do not even think it was a week had passed. And these kids just, they were amazing. They understood the schedule. Mm-hmm. They understood what they were allowed to do, when they were allowed to do it. Chaos disappeared, thankfully. Mm-hmm. But again, parents said, oh my gosh, my kid's actually excited about his homework. Thank you for helping with his homework. And he's interested in his reading and things along those lines. So again, we all, children generally, and I don't like to generalize, mm-hmm. but as human beings, we want to feel accepted. Mm-hmm. We want to feel loved. We want affirmation. Mm-hmm. And I find that over the years, and I've scholarshiped hundreds of children mm-hmm. through our system, and that's always been really, really important to me. When I started school, I said I wanted to make sure that there was a large percentage of children here that ordinarily wouldn't be able to afford it, because mm-hmm. I believe that we all can thrive given the right circumstances.
Yeah.
And it's true. Yeah. I mean, children adapt, and they adapt very, very well, much, much more so than adults.
Yeah. So how is the wardening of it, though? I mean, have you guys had to implement any type of warden system? Because I imagine on the campuses, if you're going to have to give play-by-play accounts, and I don't mm-hmm. imagine that's even possible. Mm-hmm. But so just so that you have a good chronological idea of where the children are,
yes.
what they're doing. Do you have to invest in wardens for that?
So again, you know, we're quite heavily staffed at our schools. At the primary level, again, we each cohort of no more than 20 children, mm-hmm. 20 is our max, is led by a qualified teacher and a suitable teaching assistant.
Okay.
So we have two adults in a class, so basically 1 to 10,
okay.
you know, on a good day. Our numbers are not as high as they used to be because many people have opted for homeschooling and things mm. along those lines because mm. it's very difficult to financially manage school fees as well as somebody to take care of your children as well as somebody to help them with their academics. And that's the person that's taking care of your children at home isn't always the person that's able to or qualified to assist with academics.
Yeah, I get that.
So, you know, again, many, many considerations. But we have protocols and procedures in place. Mm-hmm. And with children, again, we explain it to them and we explain how important it is to follow along the rules. And it's like following the rules of not running in the hallway. Mm-hmm. You know, it's we explain to them the importance of abiding by the rules. The COVID police came by when we were open. I think that must have been in September. I can't remember where the months are. Mm-hmm. But the COVID police came and they were walking outside. So I said to a group of kids, I was like, oh, look, we have visitors. Do mm-hmm. you know who these people are? And it was a group of, I think, second graders. Mm-hmm. And they said, oh, somebody said, that's the police. Mm-hmm. And another one said, no, that's the COVID police. Mm-hmm. So I was like, why do you think the COVID police are here? So one little girl, hilarious, she must have been 7. She's like, they're here to make sure that we're abiding by the protocols. So yeah. The lady, she's like, wait, what?
Yeah.
And so the kids were excited about showing them what we did and what we're doing. And with children, with adults as well, as long as they understand why they're doing a certain thing or why we have these things in place, and you're able to articulate that to them on their level, again, most children wantingly follow along. Mm. Yes. Mm.
I have a 6-year-old, right? And so let me tell you one of the challenges I've figured out with him.
Let me tell you something first. Mm. Your 6-year-old at home mm-hmm. is a different person to your 6-year-old less in school. I'm sure you've heard teachers tell you that before.
I guess. But I'll tell you what he's had, right? So he's had withdrawal. Like he sat down, he says, Daddy,
I can't do it.
I don't want to stay at home anymore because I have to be here with Grammy and she's really old. And this is what he said.
Okay, you said that out loud. Sorry, Grammy.
I kind of just want to go back to where my friends are, right? And I said, so where do you want to go? Why do you want to go where your friends are? He's like, because I want to play. I want to, you know, I just sit down here and I stare at this computer all day and my teacher goes blah, 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 blah. And I know all of this stuff. I don't need to be here listening to this. This is what he said, right? And so now I'm kind of anxious for him to get back to school. And he is, thankfully. But, you know, I think about the challenge. Of course, I have palpitations when I imagine my child infected with COVID-19. But, I mean, a part of me still kind of, I want him to go out there and be a boy and fall off of the bench or something. Mm-hmm. But I understand the perplexities that that creates for teaching areas. How are, like, how, because student interaction is a large part of the face-to-face environment. Mm-hmm. How then are we tailoring this so that we aren't stifling people-to-people interaction, mm-hmm. but we are being kind of safe with the whole thing?
Again, I can speak to what we do, and I watch the children. I walk around through the classes quite frequently, mm-hmm. just because I love kids, mm-hmm. and I like to see what's going on in the classroom. I like to connect. For me, I'm incredibly social, so I get what your son is saying. Mm-hmm. I miss human beings so much.
Right.
I'm telling you, and so I can only imagine what it's like for these kids that can't fully understand the concept of what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in a classroom of, you know, I'm making up 15 children, they're all sitting at their little desks with their little shields, and our kids know we keep our windows open,
mm-hmm.
and when they're sitting behind their little screen, they can, mm-hmm. they can remove their mask while they're working and writing.
Right.
But they also know that if they're going to get up to go to the teacher or they're going to get up to move around, they put their mask on.
Mm-hmm.
So like everything in life, some kids require reminding,
mm-hmm.
but for the most part, they follow along quite well. If you see them out of playtime, we've created a really clever game of tag, and I think you and I talked about mm-hmm. Pockin before.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll start that again. But we created a really clever game of tag where the child holds a noodle, you know, the swimming noodle.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember telling you in the hood I grew up in that wouldn't work.
They whack each other with the noodle.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's, again, a way for them to run around.
Okay.
And we've just invested in the coolest game. It's called bubble soccer. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's these lovely giant inflatable
and, like,
things
that
the kids can jump in and they can bang into each other. And they love it. They absolutely love it. So, again, it continues to require being creative,
mm-hmm.
Being creative, but also appreciating and respecting that there are protocols that we need to follow if we want to continue to enjoy the freedom of being together.
Now, there is one thing that came to my mind, right? I remember some time back there was a small study done, and I think this was the basis upon which schools like, what is the name of the school? What is the name of the school in Flamingo Gardens? It used to be Flamingo Gardens Primary. They name it after one of these people, right? I don't remember the name right presently. But Gaventines isn't in Flamingo. That's across the street. Gaventines is across the street the back of Burger King. That's Gaventines. I think that one in the... I don't remember which one that is.
Okay.
But it used to be Flamingo Gardens Primary School.
Okay.
If you pass that school, you'll see that the whole school is air-conditioned.
Mm-hmm.
And it was because I remember very clearly this was tied to some study about how children learned better in...
Comfort
and cool, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think about the challenges that we face in the winter, right? Because mm-hmm. it's easy to say, oh, leave the window open now
mm-hmm.
while it's cool. Pretty cool outside. Mm-hmm. June and July and September will come.
Yeah.
It will be sweltering.
Yeah.
So, I mean, do we give up what it is that we have already studied and realize is the way to go, which is in the hotter months, if you keep children cool, they have greater academic outcomes? Mm-hmm. Or do we, I mean, like, is there a way to kind of...
Again, it depends on how you look at it. Yes, I think so. I think we need to be, it's really important to look at problems and challenges from every perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just reading a brilliant book where they talked about how you look at a problem, how we tend to box our problems in. We look at it from these parameters.
Mm-hmm.
But if you step outside and you go over here and you look at it in a different way, then solutions begin to manifest themselves.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we've been looking at and talking about is building and creating outdoor classroom structures. We have one built already, and it's brilliant. And even in the summer, it's not horrific.
Okay.
It's not horrific. It has a roof
mm-hmm.
and no sides, so it's open.
Like those big chicken farm fans, maybe?
It's like, actually, we don't even have a fan in there, and it's been fine. We built it about 3 years ago, I think, just before COVID, I must have known.
Right.
But again, moving kids kind of outside of the classroom, you know, they love the outdoors. They love connecting with nature. This goes back a little bit to what you were talking about with uniforms. Maybe our uniform's going to be shorts and t-shirts and tennis shoes or tank tops so that we can be cool and we can be comfortable. So I think that we are going to like everything in life, we're going to have to adapt to, we're going to have to adapt to a new standard of norms if we're going to move forward. And the goal is to educate our children.
Right.
Yes, and we'd love to do so. Yeah, we'd love to do so in air-conditioned classrooms, but that might not be, it might not be appropriate moving forward. So I think we need to keep an open mind and look for solutions outside of the ordinary.
As the problems arise.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The name of the school is Gerald Cash. I know that. I just don't know why I don't know it.
I knew that.
Yeah. So okay. So that is there's that issue. Then of course there is the issue of school uniforms. We touched it a bit, right? Mm-hmm. Like again, let me tell you where I stand on it. Yeah. I believe that we could literally just waive this whole requirement. I believe it puts undue pressure on parents. Mm-hmm. Again, I don't buy the argument that it's for poor people because, I mean, have you seen some of the poor people's uniform? We laugh at that. And I think the greater message here is we need to teach the children not to laugh at people, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's the message, not make them all look like nutcrackers so that they don't get laughed at. Yeah. But You came up with another point. The uniforms that we wear are not conducive to this environment, right? Like I don't know what a necktie is for. I have no clue.
We have a necktie. And we just don't wear it often.
And if you went to a school that Charles W. Sanders was the principal of, listen to me, leaving this necktie home was
not an option.
You might as well just don't come. I miss school that day. Don't come, right? Because it was like blasphemy. You couldn't leave your necktie home. It was 94 degrees, and we had them right up to the neck. So maybe we have to look at that, right? Yeah. Maybe we have to look at all of our primary schools. If we're going to go back to uniforms, they're wearing golf shirts that cost $6 as opposed to the button-up French toe shirt that costs $24 in any event. Mm-hmm. I don't know how poor people afford that. Mm-hmm. But can you, in your mind, think of any reason that we need to keep children in school uniforms?
I know that, just from everything I'd read way back when I started and researched whether we would use uniforms or not use uniforms, I know one of the arguments was that it encouraged children to focus on the academics at hand, on what's happening at school, and not be so focused on style and, for example, fancy tennis, who has the Jordan tennis and all that good stuff, and that there was some sort of a social divide that might arise from children being able to wear their own clothes. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the biggest sells is the selling points is the discipline associated with wearing a uniform and children feeling like they are a part of a cohesive group, part of a family, a part of a uniformed group.
Yeah, but when people say to me, that the whole notion of a uniform is to do away with the social classism, right? Like, I think about I've been to school 20 years ago, right? I left school 20 years ago. And, I mean, we knew the boys that had the clocks. Some boys had eye-stitched clocks. Some boys had, I don't know what these is they were wearing, right? And then, of course, there were the boys that had the Tommy pants. And then there was and so fellas like me, right, because my parents wasn't rich, but I was crafty, I just tailor-made my whole uniform. My entire uniform was made by a tailor. And I was wearing the Levin brand, right? Yeah, you can't laugh at that. So what happened was, I don't know if the whole social classism went away because we just found new ways to create it. And if you look at the boys that are going to school now, the ones that I call the Robocops, the ones who can't bend their arm and their shirt, I don't even know what that's about. So even they are, in the whole scheme of the uniform thing, boys that are set aside because they look a certain way. So, I mean, I think when you consider it, I don't know if it adds to or takes away from the educational process. I think that it would certainly alleviate some burden on parents. And I don't know, social service could just give out clothes chits rather than free uniforms. That would make sense to me. And Lil Pookie could wear his shirt when he go to the mall on Saturday, right? It wouldn't make a difference. And so that's where I am on it. But okay, so now we need to talk about examinations, etc. Because there are some times when literally I imagine children won't be able to get an actual face-to-face experience, except they have that face-to-face experience, right? Like, this is the most 3.86 students I've ever seen in my entire life. I don't know where. Or Pookie, mommy was never 3.86. His daddy was never 3.86. How did Pookie become a genius? And who is tutoring him, right? But they're all 3.86 students, and I believe it's because they have the opportunity to have available to them material that they wouldn't ordinarily have during exam periods. how exactly should we consider addressing things like that as we go forward? In the event examination times aren't all face-to-face, if they're like hybrid something, or how do we ensure that we keep children safe in COVID and still employ those
traditional techniques? Just based on what I've seen in recent history, there are open book exams. There are, you know, my daughter, for example, is in law school, and her final exam was, I think, 3 weeks into her Christmas vacation. Mm. I think there are ways, and it's being done globally, there are ways to assess knowledge based on your thought process and the way you put information together, as opposed to just finding a fact in a book.
Right.
And this is where critical thinking comes into play and things along those lines. Mm-hmm. I remember when we started school, my middle daughter, she said, the news came, we did a press thing, and she said that she found school a little bit more challenging than normal. And she's quite astute. And she said, and the reporter asked her why, and she said, well, because the answers aren't in the textbook.
Mm.
And I think, you know, many, many institutions are using examinations that are based on, again, critical thinking and the way you're able to, you know, compile information and express your thoughts on certain issues. So there are ways to, I think there are ways around giving examinations online where you really have to know the material in order to be successful.
Okay.
It can't be just, you know, answer A, B, C, or D. Mm-hmm. It has to be more contextual and kids, so that we can measure their true understanding of the subject matter.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's possible, but again, it just requires looking at giving these examinations differently. So if we're not allowed to go back in for whatever reason, or kids are not allowed to come in and take an examination, it can't be an examination where the answer is online.
You Google it.
Do you know?
Yeah.
And so I think there are ways, like everything else, there are ways around that as well.
Okay. So we've talked about uniforms, right? You know where my bed is. I hate uniforms. They make no sense to me.
Guardian was implementing a uniform for y'all, though.
I'd be like Nahaj and do my show from home.
Hi, Nahaj.
We got to take a break. We're going to go to a break. But when we come back, right, like I want to talk about children in their lunch areas, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I imagine there's a new challenge there as well. Lunch is a very measured amount of time. 45 minutes, is it still that?
Some grades get an hour with eating time and play time.
Right, so you're talking about 45 minutes. Children all need to get lunch. Social distances create, you know, an automatic problem there. And so we have to think about that. We'll talk about it on the next side of the break. Listen, she's smart. I tell you all, she's smart. That's why I bring her here.
All right.
I'm Levin Miller. It's Lisa McCartney. She's in the studio with me. We'll be right back.
How important collecting your money can be to the success of your business. Start your relationship with Fidelity today so that we can show you the many options available to you with our merchant services. From click and pay options online to merchant terminals and e-commerce options, we're here to help your business succeed. For more details, speak to one of our business development officers at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit our website at fidelitygroup.com or visit any of our branches.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
Throughout our lifetime, we must all make decisions. No matter how we choose, the right one just needs to be made. Like having J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers as your insurance partner. We've been serving the Bahamas for over 100 years. Whether you need home, motor, marine, or commercial insurance, make the right decision. Call 397-2100 or visit jsjohnson.com.
J.S. Johnson Insurance. Peace of mind.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Welcome back. Thank you so much for staying with me. It's Levin Miller. I'm here on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. That means I'm unleashed on your radio. That means it's somewhere between 11 and 12 o'clock. I'm here with very smart Lisa McCartney, who is telling me all of the ways that we could just fix every problem that we've ever had. And I completely love it. Yeah, because I like thinking people, right? I like thinkers. People that think excite me, right? I have a running joke that I just made the other day. I'm back in college, right? Believe it or not, it's because I need this little paper. I have to get it, right? It's about self-actualization at this point, not about education or intelligence. I just want to be able to say, I did it, shut up, don't ever ask me about it again. Yeah. And laughably, right, I went in because I stopped my studies because I feel like Jesus didn't want me in college. I'll tell you why. Like, it took me 18 years to convince myself to go to school. And then when I went, every college on the planet shut down. I said, this is Jesus. It must be Jesus, right? And so I'm back now, right? And I laugh because I say, so when are we going to get back to face-to-face? They said, oh, no, we haven't figured out what we're going to do about face-to-face yet. I said, wait a minute. Isn't this a college? So they said, yes. I said, isn't the purpose of college to create people that will fix the problems of the world? Yes. Ouch. Then why are we not working on this one? At the very least, let us come to school, right? Worst case scenario, and this is the kind of advice my daddy would give, worst case scenario, we all die, right? But if we don't die, at least we would say we figured out a way to have face-to-face learning, and we want to present this document to the government of Bahamas, right? So anyway, you pray my strength, the Lord.
Death virtual, is a big price to play, though.
Virtual learning is not working at all for me. My brain don't work that way.
Yeah.
My brain don't work that way. I listen, I have the attention span of a wet kitten. Literally. All right? So let's talk about children in their lunch spaces, because I imagine that's a problem. I'm kind of military as well, so I say just cut 1 hour off the day, don't let the children eat, and then send them home early. But it would make sense. It's the same 1 hour, right? But until you learn that...
At 2 o'clock, no.
But until you learn that some children leave home and don't eat.
Yes.
So they have to eat in the middle of the day.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Other than that, their brain will be off in any event.
So again, scheduling.
Mm-hmm.
Scheduling is really important. We can't have the entire school out at lunch at one time.
Okay.
So the first way to address that is by creating cohorts of children that will eat together. And that's something that we do. Like, and I'm pretty sure that's true of most of the private schools.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been doing that for years. Like, we've never had a situation where our entire student body is having lunch at once.
Okay.
So what we've done is we schedule, and it's even, we've even created smaller groupings post-COVID. And we schedule their lunch and break time. So the way the kids move is all very much scheduled and structured.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, we eat first. So you'd have group A has their lunch at the lunch tables. The tables are labeled and they sit. And everybody has to eat for, I think it's 15 minutes or something like that. So everybody in that cohort has, whether you finish
it's
early
like eating
or,
on demand, eat!
Yes, you have to eat at that time. So we don't, but and you know what? We always did it because... little kids, a lot of them are, oh my gosh, we just want to play. So
Like,
I'm finished my food, or throw their sandwich in the bin because they want to go and play. So what we do is it's a tranquil time where everybody sits. The TAs sit along with the kids, watch them, make sure that, you know, nobody's running around with food in their mouth to get choked, or that they're also eating their food properly. And then they move out and they go to play in one of four. I think we have one, two, three, four designated play spaces. So that group would go out, and on Monday they're going to play in space A, for example. The tables are cleaned and sanitized, and then the second group comes out and they begin eating while the first group is playing.
Okay.
And we kind of cycle our kids that way.
Okay.
So the lunchtime, again, it's done in an orderly fashion so that we ensure that children are getting their right nutrients, they're eating properly, and that they aren't running around and you know, breaking the protocols.
I'll tell you what sounds interesting to me, right? Because the more I hear you talk, the more it sounds to me like the answer to spacing is the addition of more people, right? And what do I mean? Like the government schools won't have a TA, right? And I think that's a large part of the issue. And so maybe if you actually added more people to the school, mm-hmm. that in itself would create opportunities where you could create greater spacing. Although that song's oxymoronic, right? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the general school of thought is spread the people out everywhere, but mm-hmm. that wouldn't work. Mm-hmm. And so maybe that is one of the things that we have to look into. How do we get people that are either in school or college students that are, I don't know, apt enough to work along as TAs, possibly. Yes. That may be a wonderful little opportunity for them to gain some money, because you just be poor in college. That's why I ain't gone. I couldn't deal with that level of poverty. Yeah. But you could also gain some on-the-job exposure. Imagine you graduate with your bachelor's degree, but you got 3 years of on-the-job training as a TA, right? Mm-hmm. So we have to think about these things. And if you got TAs, like you say, now we could schedule the children. Grade ones could go together. The TAs could look at them while the teachers go do teacher stuff mm-hmm. and that kind of stuff, all right? That sounds really cool. I like that. Now, I know this isn't a big challenge for you, but it's definitely something that's near to my heart. And I know I want you to help me think my way through it, right? Pookie them decide to walk to school or catch the bus. Mm-hmm. They don't get drop off. Mm-hmm. First week of school, you get drop off because your shoe is still new, right? How are we dealing, or how do, because right now, as it stands, ridership in public service is still 50%. Mm-hmm. Every time I think about school going back to full blast, I think about the absolute chaos that will create. Right. Because when bus riding is at 100% capacity, there are days I think, because I did bus driving as well, right? Like I did a little bit of everything. There are days when I could recall going up Carmichael Road, and by the time as I got to Bamboo Shack on the corner of McKinney Drive, mm-hmm. I couldn't pick up another student. Mm-hmm. Admittedly, I would pass primary school children. Because primary school children cost 50 cents.
You said that out loud, too.
Yeah, right? So I would just pass them.
Yeah.
And pick up high school students, right? But it's because in my head as a businessman, I'm doing the cents and the dollars of it and not necessarily thinking about the children that are the future, right?
Shame.
Yeah,
shame.
I know. I'm going to throw myself down the stairs when I'm done. Okay. But we have to figure that out, because we need to make sure. It doesn't matter what we do in the school if the child can't mm-hmm. get to the school. Mm-hmm. What exactly are some of the thoughts that you're thinking about that?
I believe, and again, I'm going to preface this with, I acknowledge that I'm not privy to all of the challenges mm-hmm. that the government faces. I'm not privy to budgets. I'm sure, you know, most of my ideas involve dollars and cents. Mm-hmm. But what I would personally like to see, And you're right, and that's one of the things that I talked about when I said the public school has far greater challenges or different challenges than I do, because everybody walks to school.
Right.
So there's a super spreader on every corner.
Correct.
Right, when you think about it. So what I would like to see, and what I think I'd like to see us explore as a country, is several things. First of all, engaging all these millions of church buildings we have in our country, mm-hmm. there is an empty church on every single street corner mm-hmm. in New Providence anyway. Mm-hmm. So I think we all agree that we're not going to be able to pack our 40 kids into a classroom moving forward. Mm-hmm. So we need to think about classroom space and mm-hmm. spacing for our kids. I would love to see us engage our churches mm-hmm. in the community to spread our kids out.
Right.
And utilize those buildings.
Okay.
I would love for us to also utilize some sort of a shift system mm-hmm. where we know little kids are much better in the morning. We know teenagers would love to sleep until 1 o'clock
yeah.
and they're up until 1 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. So in order to create more classroom space, we could consider primary school kids using all of our school spaces for mm-hmm. primary school kids during the morning.
Right.
And using all of our classroom spaces for high school children in the evening. Say high school starts at 4 o'clock until 9.
Union issues, though. You have union issues there.
I mean, well, again, maybe we need to just sit down and talk about what we want to accomplish. Do mm-hmm. we want to accomplish? Do we want to bridge the gap for our children? Do mm-hmm. we want to give them the gift of an education? Mm-hmm. Or do we want to?
I see you don't understand how these union agreements work.
Let's all sit around the table.
Right, and I think that's what has to happen.
Let's determine what's best for the children mm-hmm. and what we need to do for the children. And it may not be In fact, it will not be the status quo. Mm-hmm. It will not be what we've been doing for 30 years.
Right.
It's not going to be that. So mm-hmm. I think that if we start again, this is that thinking outside of the box concept. Mm-hmm. We can't continue looking at the problem the way we've always been looking at the problem, because the problem's grown into a monster now.
Sure. Sure. But so, to the credit of unions, right? Because I don't want people to think I'm attacking unions. I understand mm-hmm. why unions are sometimes so unflinching. It's mm-hmm. because of the way they've been treated by successive governments,
yeah.
right? And
yeah.
so if they flinch...
Everybody has reasons. Everybody has reasons right. for where they are. But I always say to my kids, when there's conflict at school, when there's conflict at home, I say, let's stop and assess where we are in this moment. Mm-hmm. Let's acknowledge what's happened in the past, because mm-hmm. we don't want to just forget it. Mm-hmm. Acknowledge what's happened in the past, but also plan what we want to see for ourselves in the future.
Sure.
And look at what we want to accomplish, and then begin to figure out how we can get there. Mm-hmm. We can't live in the past.
Sure. Sure.
So again, no disrespect intended to anyone.
Right.
But I do believe that we can't solve a problem unless we A, acknowledge it, and B, commit to solving it.
Okay. Somebody's been calling my phone. It's like 1,000 times they've called. They obviously want to talk to you, so we got time for one call, all right? Let's take the call, Kermit. Good morning, caller. You're on.
Good morning.
This is Mr. Bowlin.
Guest in the year.
Hold on, Mr. Bowlin.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just a disclaimer. So is that too loud?
That's too loud.
Okay, hold on.
Okay, perfect.
Okay, Mr. Bowlin actually taught me in grade 10.
Hello, Mr. Bowlin.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, and I want to underscore everything that has been said about the 30 year and not the status quo and all the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to fight against leaving with uniforms. Even teachers sometimes wear uniform, mm-hmm. cut down on their expenses. Mm. So they don't have to dress up every day.
Okay.
So so we may be solving a problem in uniform, but everybody may not have that situation. And it also identifies the different categories of students, the high school, the junior high, the primary school. And so that we also have to keep the society disciplined. Mm-hmm. You know, it's our culture in the English speaking part of the world, as against the Americans, no uniform. So that's the only thing about it. But everything else, perfect, on point.
Right.
And I hope what is done in the private school could be duplicated into the public school. It's a big, big hope. And I don't know how we get it done, but we have to find a way to get it done.
Well, small conversations get big things to happen. That's something I always believe in. Like, listen, let's just get in the room, right? Like, invite me to lunch. Let's just get everybody in the room, though. And once we're in the room, we can start talking about things.
I'm a part of a group of small independent school operators that have already approached the government with a view of helping.
Mm-hmm.
And just hands up, if there's anything you need, we'd love to sit in a room and help you brainstorm ideas, share the ideas that we're all working on. We're all now working on remediation for our students and mm-hmm. how we bridge this gap that's occurred as a result of COVID. And, you know, one of the smart things for us to do is to share our resources, mm-hmm. share our best practices mm-hmm. with each other. And, you know, this way, again, everybody is successful. I've always been of the impression that it's useless to be successful. You can't be successful in a vacuum. It doesn't make sense for me to focus all of my energy on my one school
mm-hmm.
and the rest of, you know, the country is not doing well, or, you know, the government's struggling and public school kids are struggling. Everybody deserves an education.
Some people have some questions for you. Good morning, Mr. Miller. Is there a number that I can call? No, this is for me. That you can call me on off air. You could actually just look for me on Facebook. My name is LeyVon, because my parents thought it was cute to put a Y in the middle of my name. Miller, and I answer all my own social media, so I'm going to be there. This one here says, hi, Mr. Miller. Please ask Ms. McCartney, where can I find her website on admission info?
So we have our Meridian School website is currently being rebuilt. So you can call the school if you're interested. And the number is 328-1151 or 328-1152. If you're interested in Windsor Schools, we do have our website is windsorschoolbahamas.com. And you can find that website is up and running.
Someone actually says here that T.G. Glover switched their school uniforms to dry fit shirts and shorts,
nice.
Pants and skirts instead of ties and jumpers. They're not sure why that wasn't implemented throughout the whole school. It probably wasn't implemented because we haven't looked at it collectively. We'd have to look at it collectively to see if we could kind of get it done. Anyway, I hear my music. That means we're out of time. As much as I enjoy talking to you, this has to come to an end. Just tell everybody where to find you one last time before we get out of here.
So again, I'm Lisa McCartney. I'm at the Meridian School at Unicorn Village and also Windsor School at Old Fort.
All right. And I'm Levin Miller, and this is Guardian Radio 96.9. They're your station for fresh news and smart talk. I know you know, the world knows, they do it all day. So don't move. They've got the news for you, and that happens next.
Positioning us, justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, his spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa's.